Welcome to the Cemetery Chronicles, hosted by two friends who manage cemeteries in the Twin Cities. This podcast takes you behind the gates and into the unique world of cemeteries. Join us as we share heartfelt stories, unexpected humor, and the profound moments that come with a career dedicated to honoring life and legacy. From the Paradise Picture Studio, here are your hosts, Dominic Pierre and Bobby Schoenrock.
Bobby, how are you today?
Well, we're here.
Another week. Yeah, another week. I've lost track. I think 33, 34, somewhere around there.
34,
podcast number 34. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cemetery Chronicles. I'm Dominic. This is Bobby. Yep, if you guys don't know us yet. Yeah. So how has your week been? Anything fun?
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking for a couple of weeks about tryouts are over, so I'm done with that part of my life. I can actually get my life back a little bit.
Yeah.
Exhausted, you know, like you can even ask my secretary, Josie. She was like, "You seem giddy today." I'm like, "Because I don't have anything to do after work. Like, I can actually go home and work on my own stuff at home."
So,
So it's been a good week so far. Busy. You know, you and I talked earlier today. Super busy at work.
Yeah.
Tons of traditional burials, which is, you know, great for the cemetery, but it's just, I mean, you know as well as I do that they're a lot more work than a cremation. So, we've just been swamped, just digging graves, filling in.
Yeah, totally.
Take it over to the next one. So
yeah. You know, same. We are doing I think we haven't been as busy as you for sure. However, we have been picking up on full size burials, which is interesting. In the atmosphere we are, where it seems like it's all cremation. We now have a few, and they're all full size, which is interesting. We had one today. It was a Hispanic family, and we, you know, didn't, the family never mentioned anything to us. Funeral home didn't say anything. We didn't, we just assumed they would be anything like a regular traditional burial. They come and watch, you know, maybe watch the casket be lowered, maybe the vault cover on, but then all of a sudden, okay, can we watch we want to fill in the grave. We want to watch everything. And this is something that happens with our Hmong population. And whenever we have a burial from a Hmong funeral home, we just assume it. We know that we have the tractor, whatever, we have everything. However, we didn't flinch. We said, yeah, absolutely, you know, I'll get my staff up here. It may just take a few minutes. And they felt, they were so apologetic because the daughter came up and said, "I'm so sorry, we didn't tell you. We don't need to do that." I said, no. We'll get it done. They're not an inconvenience at all. But
it makes me feel bad.
I know. I kind of. I know. I did try. I was trying to be very, very kind about it. And we did. We fulfilled everything. While we're waiting, because we at Union, we have a cooler of water for everybody. I started handing out waters to everybody. It'll just be a second, but you know, drink, have some water, enjoy, you know. But we got it all set and not a problem at all. So it was good.
Well, we at Oakland prefer that they don't hang around for 45 minutes, so we try not to give water out.
Well, you know what? When they watch the burial, that I'm fine with that because, hey, once the burial's done, you can hang around as long as you want. We're out of there. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing better than a weekday burial or a weekend burial on a Saturday because we don't typically work on Saturdays. So if you have a Saturday burial, we're just coming in for the burial, and it's a Hmong burial or something like that where they want to witness the burial. I love that because you know exactly what you're getting into. You know they're not going to linger and we have to wait until everybody leaves to do the burial. Everybody's there, we come in, we do the burial, and you guys can stay all day. I could care less, but we're going to get out of here.
You would like this. So, you know, I just talked about how we were doing a ton of traditional burials. We did have a cremation the other day and they asked us to bury ahead of time, like go up there, put it in. And then, you know, they would just come up and do a little service after.
Yeah.
I said, "So do you need the table or anything?" "No, bring the table back. We don't need a table. We don't need any of that." But we had to put tent and chairs up, everything.
Yeah.
And then I was proceeded, once I got up there, I was getting yelled at because the ground was too bumpy. And I was told, where's the table so we can sign the guest book? And I said, well, I told you we had a table up here and you said you didn't need a table. And she's like, well, we do. And so I had to go down and get the table and bring it back up again. And they were there for an hour and a half. And I mean, and it's already in the hole. You know, like the only thing that we haven't done is filled the hole in. Like the urn is in the vault is sealed, everything's done. And they were there for so long. And then when they left, they just said, I just can't believe how you guys can let this ground be this bumpy. And I just said, well, you do know where you are, correct? And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, this is a cemetery. I said, we try to do the best we can to make it flat and nice and perfect, but this isn't a golf course.
Yeah.
And I said, we have to dig graves constantly. I said, there's markers. I said, some of those bumps you feel are just where the marker is that you're walking over, you know? And they said, well, I just assumed it would be a lot smoother up here.
Like what, were they concerned about rolling ankles or something
Well,
like
they
that?
were walking with, you know, walkers like on wheels. And they said, this is really hard. And I said, well, there's, you know, seven men watching you walk. They could definitely help you. I'll gladly help you. So I helped the lady out and I'm like, yeah. And she's like, oh, some of these guys never change. They don't help. I said, doesn't seem like it.
I don't, isn't that interesting? I find the same thing. This is the new world we live in. This is foreign to anybody who even got out of the industry 10 years ago. I feel that people are hypercritical about everything. Like if there's the smallest inconvenience, like they have to let you know, like, oh my goodness, how's the grandpa? What do you expect? I mean, have you, this is me, and this is what goes through my head. I don't verbalize it, but you, first off, you're not the one that's even paying for the interment, most likely. You haven't put a dime towards the cemetery, and you expect the cemetery to look like a golf course. Do you realize when you go golfing, you're spending $100 a round to go for 4 hours? Or, I mean, if you want to give us $100 a day, you know, and have several people give that to us, maybe we could keep this up like a golf course, but we can't. We're a nonprofit. We really get minimal for what the services we provide, and we still get yelled at about how much it costs.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's kind of crazy, you know, I think the family is pretty well to do, and it just to me sometimes seems like people, the more money people have, the like more upset they get about everything, and then
Yeah.
their expectation on things, you know, like the one lady goes, oh, this is your tent there, you know, there's a hole up there. I go, well, it's 80 and sunny. I don't know. You know, I don't know what you want me to
Insane.
say. Like
You
it
know,
was
I you're
gorgeous
right.
out.
You're right. And I don't need to make a commentary on, you know, politics or anything like that, but I do see that it seems like the more well-to-do or the other end of the spectrum, the folks who maybe on welfare or don't, let's just be honest, the people who are well-to-do or the people who aren't working, the people who are like blue-collar folks, they understand. They come and they appreciate everything you do because they know the hard work that it goes into it. But both ends of the spectrum, hopefully I don't get in trouble for saying that, but
But that, I'm telling you, like the comments were, oh, you know, there's a hole there. I'm like, yeah, there is, but it's 80 and it's beautiful outside today. I don't even know why we have a tent up. You know,
yeah.
like it's gore. It was like 78. It was gorgeous.
I
You couldn't
know.
ask for a better day.
I let people know that too. People always ask, oh, we want a tent. Well, I understand if it's super, or you know, if it's super warm out, typically tents will hold the heat in. You don't necessarily want that. Yeah, I mean, tents are really only good when it's raining or snowing or there's some kind of elements. However, I know, I understand. It looks nice. I understand that, and it kind of gives a presence for the location of burial. And I understand that. However, yeah, when it's 78 degrees out and sunny, you don't want a tent.
And a gorgeous fall day, and
Yeah.
then you know, making comments because we have one little hole up. That tent is like 40 years old. You know, we rarely set a tent because Brown Wilbert or whatever company comes over to do a setup sets their own tents, you know. So
Yeah.
we don't even rarely set a tent anymore for anything. And
We should have told them you're a nonprofit and we'd be glad to take donations for a new tent if they'd like.
yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, but I'm like, I just want everyone to leave.
I know. I know.
I just want to do my job.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is most likely family members too who are not going to be back at your cemetery. So it's like you just got to let those comments just.
Well, most of them are from out of town, and then.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So it's, you got to laugh. But yeah, it's frustrating in the moment because it's like, oh my gosh, I think we've talked about this. I mean, all the hard work you put in to try to make sure that the day goes flawlessly for family members and those little comments like that just like pierce in your heart because it's like all the hard work you put in is like you no one notices. Like they want to criticize no matter what you do, and it's frustrating.
Well, there was a tree removed, and they were asking me, thank God it didn't rain, the one lady said, because that would be all mud. And I go, well, what would you like me to do? Snap my fingers and make the grass grow?
Well, you know why you're hearing a lot of these complaints is because most of these families probably had a funeral over at Union and they realized how beautiful a cemetery is. And then they come to you and they just, they see that and they're like, I can understand
The
the
lady's like, when did you take the tree out? I was like, 2 weeks ago. I
complaints.
apologize, the grass hasn't come back yet, but
I know, isn't that crazy how fast people or weed controls? There's a weed on my parents' grave. Can you want to make sure that that's gone? Oh, next week they're coming. Those weeds aren't gone yet. Like, oh my goodness, like give us a, you don't want to put that down in the middle of July. There's like, oh, there's all these things people just expect it. Well, why don't you go out there and comb out the weeds and just pull them your hand? Like, yeah, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go out there and get on our hands and knees and just pull weeds out of 60 acres or 100 acres. Oh, anyways, how fun.
Yeah, well, we don't need to complain anymore about our weeds. I know we want to talk a little bit about like you're getting prepared for your 2026 budgets and pricing and stuff like that. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, I got our well, so we at our cemetery, we want to talk a little bit about boards and just preparing for board meetings and working with board members. And we have people who listen who have emailed us. Not going to mention the names, Denise. But I know that you love your boards. Trust me, I've gotten the emails. You absolutely adore your boards. So maybe some of us don't. I don't know why you're laughing but not laughing, Bobby. But we have on our for our board meetings, we have quarterly board meetings. So at the end of each quarter, so October we'll go over the third quarter. And then now after October, we will have a break until we have our annual meeting in March. Typically the fourth quarter would be gone over in January. However, we go over the full year, the fourth quarter in the full year at our annual meeting, and that's in March. And then we have back-to-back meetings, so March and then April. And April goes over our first quarter, and then we have the next meeting in July for second quarter invite, so on. So four meetings a year. We have room for a fifth in November in case we can't get everything done in our October meeting, because our October meeting is pretty booked with items to go over, one of which or many of which it's our budget for the next year. The price increases, if we're going to potential any price increases, the proposal for that, and any other things, miscellaneous things. But those two things combined, the budget and pricing, are two big ticket items that we have to go over and present to the board. So that has been quite the process. And you got to remember, we're presenting a budget for an entire year in October, so we still have 3 months to go before January. And so I'm anticipating costs for next year, healthcare costs, which still aren't out. So I'm guesstimating on how much of an increase that's going to be, and just other costs. However, so that's been quite the process. So definitely the last month and a half, for sure, I've been really in the trenches trying to go line by line, trying to figure out or get ready for the budget next year. We used to not do budgets. I don't know if you guys really do too analytical on budgets, but it works. I really appreciate it now. It used to be, it used to be that we didn't have quarterly board meetings. We used to have, I think, 7 or 8 board meetings a year, so it was almost monthly in the summer months, which is fine. However, it's time consuming, and having to prep for a meeting once a month, it gets kind of crazy. But when you don't have a budget per se, and you need a large ticket item because something failed or whatnot, you can just propose it at that board, the next board meeting, which may be just a couple of days or a couple of weeks away, and just go and just manage the cemetery that way. However, what's really nice about a budget, and going over it for the year, you have to analyze where all your costs, where all your expenses are going, and then also trying to plan for revenue. Revenue is a little bit difficult, obviously, because you just don't know how many burials you're going to do, how many markers you're going to sell, how many this and that. However, I've gone off of 5-year averages, for all those things, and to be honest, it's been fairly close almost every year. I've
Wow.
been really close.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. We don't necessarily, break everything down budget-wise. We more or less when we have our August meeting, which is held on site, we kind of just roll through everything, like where we're standing, what equipment, if we do need to replace any equipment, like ahead in the next 6 months. What we're looking for, like at our August meeting, we talked about the proposal for, trying to get some bids on, doing a new building. And so we do a lot of that stuff. So we kind of, what we try to do is, talk over how the summer went, how everything has gone up to that point. And then we start to look at, where we were at, and we have our accounting department actually is great. The company that we use puts together stuff from the previous couple years. They can look at everything. We can go over everything. If anyone has questions on anything, we can go over all that stuff. And then like I said, if we're thinking, okay, this winter or next spring, we want to start to look at, we need a new mower, or we need a new truck, or we're doing this, that, and the other thing. Then we'll start talking about that type of stuff.
No, that makes sense. And that's where I'm at. We're just doing it once a year, and it's just in October here. So I go over what we have next year for equipment. We just have one mower that has depreciated out, and we try to use a life cycle for about 5 or 6 years on those mowers, and just then sell the old one used and get a new one to replace it. We found that doing 5 or 6 years, the hours get up to about the 2,000 range, a little bit over 2,000 range on those mowers after that time. And once you're running over that amount of time, that's where things really start breaking down almost pretty consistently. And it's time to kind of retire it to somebody who might be a homeowner or whatnot and isn't putting in the hours on that mower that you do. So I don't know where you're at with mowers and how often you replace them.
Well, we try to run them. That's one thing for us, is we try to run stuff as far out as we think we can do it, And then we've got for mower wise, we've got like a 24, a 22, a 21, and then we have a 2017 that's got quite a few hours on it, but it's still one of our most reliable mowers right now. So
And where you
until
are, what's a quite a few hours?
I think it's got like 2600, and it's been one of our more reliable machines. And I've talked about this before. Like, we go through everything, and I'm sure you guys do, and we have records of everything. We go through all the hoses, belts, filters. We do all that stuff all winter long, and we try to make stuff last as long as we
Oh,
can
absolutely.
for. And so we've been fortunate, like, we've got our plow truck, which, you know, gets used a little bit in the summertime to go around, pick up sticks or for trimming trees or something. But for the most part, we try to stay out of it and
Yeah.
use some of our smaller equipment in the summer for guys just driving around. And, you know, that's a 2011.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've hardly put anything into that truck.
Yeah. And there's definitely trucks can last it. It all depends.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. We try to just cycle out a little bit. Mowers are one of those things we try to keep as minimum. We only have three mowers. So we try to keep as minimal amount of mowers as possible. We'll have those three mowers going constantly in the summer. You probably could have a fourth just in case one goes down. However, we just don't have the room. That's the issue. We
Yeah.
don't have garage space for it. So we keep those three, and then when we start hitting, some of those higher hours on it, I just can't afford to have it down constantly, which I've found, happens more often than not when you have a higher hour machine.
Yep.
So we just try to cycle them out. That's the one thing that if there's any piece of equipment that we cycle out a little bit more often than not, it's definitely our mowers for
Yeah.
sure.
I
It's
mean,
not like we're buying new trucks all the time.
no, and no one can afford to be down for very long with their lawnmowers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially on a summer like we just had.
Oh, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And we haven't had, thank God, knock on wood, we haven't had our mowers go down for a fairly significant amount of time, which is a good thing. However, it got me nervous last week, hopping off the budget train here for a second. Our tractor, backhoe tractor, we were pulling some stumps and we were grinding some stumps, but we were trying to pull some stumps too. And we're not me because I don't get out of the office, remember? My grounds guy was out there with the tractor, and he calls me. Yeah, I always love those radio calls. Dominic, copy? Yeah, this is Dominic. Can you meet me out on block 23 real quick? I'm like, that's always like, oh crap, what happened? Anyways, I go up there and he had the tractor in the road because the stump was fairly close to the side of the road, and there's hydraulic fluid everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And you look underneath the tractor and it's just pouring out. Like, oh no. Well, that's not good, So then it's like, okay, let's figure this out real quick. Let's try to analyze it where this is coming from. So I said, just turn the tractor on real quick. And he turns the tractor on and then it starts spraying again. I was like, okay, at least that tells me one of two things, that it's under constant, whatever, wherever the leak is, it's under constant pressure. It's not under pressure. It's not like one of the levers for the backhoe or not the lever for the dump box. So, because typically that won't leak unless you're actually pulling on the lever.
Yeah.
So it's something that's under constant pressure. So it's got to be before that. So let's see if we can find this line. So we got underneath the tractor and I couldn't find it anywhere. And all of a sudden I looked in the hydraulic filter. I just grabbed the hydraulic filter real quick and it was loose. I was like, oh, this might actually be a pretty simple fix. So pulled that hydraulic filter off, and sure enough, the rubber bushing on it was just marred and gone. I was like, well, so I made a fun little trip down to Shakopee, which is about 45 minutes away, where we have our Case dealer, and ran and got a new hydraulic filter. Popped that guy back on when I got back and threw in another 8 gallons of hydraulic fluid and no more leaking. Thank God.
And
Because,
some cleanup in the road.
yeah, definitely some cleanup on the road. But it was that could, I mean, hydraulic leaks can, that's one of those things, you don't know. Most likely you probably blew a line and you're not fixing that most of the time. You're getting that tractor now hauled into a dealer. You're going to be out of the tractor for probably minimally a week. And what do you do? Well, my backup for those situations is I'm renting a tractor, renting to dig graves, whatnot. I don't know if you've ever thought, we kind of have some emergency planning in case something like that happens with a piece of equipment like that. And my emergency plan is running over to our local rental shop and renting a tractor for digging burials and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, we've got there is a company that'll come and fix hoses right on site, and we've had to have them come out a few times, like, you know, and say, hey, listen, we've got to get this hose back on. We've got a funeral tomorrow,
Yeah.
so and they come right out and they they can make the holes right in their truck and then do everything right there. We've
Oh.
had, yeah, we've had that. And long time ago when I was a young man, we had to break over the hole and we had
Oh,
to dig a
yeah.
grave. So I finished the grave by hand, and then by the time I got done, the guy already had the thing fixed and we could have just used the tractor again.
Ah, that stinks.
But
Yeah, but you got a plan like that. You're exactly right.
yeah.
And so I have those contingency plans, worst case scenario basically, kind of written out for my staff. And it's not necessarily because we need to have that written out. I mean, when things like this happen, I typically know all our vendors and know who to go to get things fixed and get things fixed
Yeah.
fi quick. And if we don't have, and if it's not, if having somebody fix it quick is not available to us, then what our next option is. What makes me nervous is I'm out of town, I'm gone on vacation, whatnot, and then this happens, and then my guys don't necessarily have those same contacts that I do. At least
Yeah.
it's written out. All right, you contact, if you have a hose break, whatnot, contact these guys, see if they can come out and fix it for you. If they can't, then contact this local rental company and get a tractor. You have the authority at this point to rent that tractor,
Yeah.
and we can get it done. So at least there's just some kind of contingency plan to make sure that the operation continues, and so that they're aware of it. Worst case scenarios. Luckily, we haven't had to use any of those contingency plans, so.
Yeah, and I think we've been really fortunate with the companies that we work with because they understand
Yeah.
where we're at. Like they do enough work for local landscape companies, whatever it is.
Yep.
And they get that you don't make money if it's out there. But for us, it's not necessarily you don't make money. Like, we can't stop a funeral from happening.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
So, we have to get it done. We have to have a plan. And
Yeah,
so.
you're exactly right. And l luckily for us, we have a Case tractor, and the local Case dealer is Titan Machinery here in Minnesota, and that's they're like I said, they're 45 minutes away. However, they have even when they're closed, they have an emergency parts line because that's exactly it. They know their clients have probably one machine, and if it goes down, they're SOL. And so they have emergency after hours numbers to contact if you need parts, things like that. Luckily, our operation is the same hours, so I don't have to worry about that. However, you're exactly right. A lot of these companies and a lot of vendors are there to help and make sure you're up and operational fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because you're exactly everybody that they work with relies on those pieces of equipment. But anyways, I diverted from the budget, and but it's a good diversion because there's obviously things that happen throughout the year that it costs a lot of money that n you didn't necessarily foresee. So I can budget all day until I'm blue in the face. However, I can't, let's say there's something happens with the tractor. We had to have an overhaul with we have a smaller Kubota tractor with a bucket front end loader. And we had to have a full engine overhaul on it. This was probably about 3 years ago, 15 grand for a full engine overhaul. Not in the budget. I mean, these are those things though that now when we go over, because they'll go over the financials on a quarterly basis when they're in at the board meetings, this is when that's brought up, obviously, and then I can bring that up. Obviously, on this line, you'll see under
Yeah.
equipment repairs, we're significantly over budget, and this is the reason why we had one significant event. But then the board's aware of it, because everything that happens, and I found this out when I was an accountant. I was an accountant at an airline, and this is. And everybody told you as an accountant, a young accountant going into it, like, hey, if you want to know the dirt on the company, or if you want to know anything that's happening in a company, talk to an accountant because everything that happens in the company has a dollar tag associated with it. And the accountants are the ones who see those bills come through. They know exactly what's happening in the company. They know where repairs are had to be made, emergency repairs had to be made, to the point where they know where CEOs are having dinner with their HR directors quite often. When affairs are happening, things like that. Accountants know all the dirt in a company. So anything that's happening in your business is going to go through accounting. So when it comes to like your quarterly board meetings and going through the profit and loss and your balance sheet, any significant thing that's happening in your cemetery is going to probably be brought up just because there's always a number attached to it. So
Yeah.
that's the nice part about budgeting, I think.
So here's a good question for you. Like, does your board, when they see that line, they see that you're over, do they ever say, well, how can this be avoided? Or what was there something you could have done differently that, do they question that ever?
Luckily my board, they are, like I was mentioning before, how we talk about like blue collar folks tend to understand, things happen. My board is very blue collar, and they do understand that. No, I've never gotten that pushback. Occasionally I'll probably bring up that before they even have that question. I always try to, me personally, whenever anything happens, we have to have a workers' comp claim, we have to do anything, my first question is always, how do we get, the worker with a workers' comp claim? Can we get them, how injured are they? How do we resuscitate or, rehabilitate them? But the next question is always, how do we avoid this in the future? And the
Yeah.
same thing, whenever you have a especially like an engine overhaul, 15 grand engine overhaul, that's my first question myself is, what did we miss to have an engine totally fail like this? In this case, we didn't miss anything. There was no annual maintenance that we missed. It was one of those things where I think there was a gear that was grinding inside, and it went really quick, and there was nothing that we could have seen on it, foreseen on it. But that's a good question, and I usually bring that up so the board doesn't even ask that question.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think when you're in front of the board and you're talking about everything, going into it being prepared, right? So like, when we get back our financials that we're going to go over with the board and there's a big number in there, I think it's just easy to be like writing your notes right on there, right? Like, last year in June through August, we spent X amount on repairs, and this year we're way over that because we had something fail, and then like we had a similar thing where we needed to put a transmission in one of our older John Deere Gators, and you start to look at it and say, okay, I can put 5,000 into the transmission and the clutch, or I can spend 35,000 and try to find another one. So it's like, what can we do? Well, if we put 5,000 into it, it's going to be like it's brand new almost. So, and then we can get 10 more years out of it, or we buy a new one for 35,000, and then you have to sit and pay all that extra money. So.
No, you're exactly right. And we did that too. That's typically how our, I mean, lack of a better term, budgeting worked prior. We'd always, our profit and loss or balance sheet would always be compared to the year prior. You're exactly right. So you'd look at that and you'd say, well, why is this line item so much more than what you did last year? Or why is it so much under? And that's a fairly decent way of budgeting, and I understand why folks will do that. However, it can be challenging too, because especially when you're looking at revenue or expenses, maybe you had a down year last year when it came to interments, and now you're having a super crazy year, so the numbers are a little bit more difficult. Or so when I put the budget out there, so let's say we had a down year last year, we were maybe 15, 20, 25% lower on interments than we typically are. Well, my budget's still going to be is going to be higher than last year, because I'm assuming that we're going to have a bounce back, and we're going to be closer to our 5-year average, which is typical. So then when the board is looking at numbers, they're looking at actuals versus budget,
Yeah.
and those are going to be a lot closer than actuals versus last year potentially. And so I don't have to remember potentially what happened last year, because I'm sure you're doing that a lot when you're comparing, well, why is this so much different than last year? Well, last year, if you remember right, we had this happen. I don't necessarily have to have that on top of mind. I just have to have on top of mind what's happening this year compared to where I budgeted, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it also keeps me on track too, because I look at that budget and I see, shoot, why is, August so much lower in this expenditure than what I budgeted? Let me look into that. And I'm like, oh crap, our accounting bill is due and it didn't hit. I got to make sure that gets paid. It just keeps you on track, too, to make sure that everything is getting paid. And you're just or you're analyzing it and going, well, I assume that we were going to get hit with our accounting, but or our accounting, expense was going to hit in August, but they didn't bill me until September. Okay, well, I'll move that to the next month, but at least I'm aware of it that it's coming. It's on top of mind that way. So that's what I do appreciate about budgeting and just kind of watching your numbers via the budget. So that is kind of helpful. Yeah. But that's been fun. But the other thing that couples with it and why it's such a big meeting, this next one we have, is because I have to because when you budget, it goes hand in hand with where your prices are. So if you're going to increase pricing, you better figure that out before you do the budget, because that's going to affect your revenue on the budget. So that's why that gets coupled in with it.
And then, so how is your board? Does your board go and do like a, I know every board's different how they do this, but like does your board for if you're going for raises and stuff, do you propose that stuff to them or do they propose it to you or how does it work for you?
Yeah, initially when I first came on, I didn't put in, for payroll expenses, anything in there. I'd just say, okay, that's up to you as the board what you want to do for a percentage increase or whatever you want to do for payroll, excuse me. Now, to be honest, I propose it, and I propose it in a way where here's what I think, here's where inflation was at. If we want to keep it with inflation, or if we've taken on quite a few new tasks this year, or we've learned, we should go higher, and just give me the tools, to, here's where I'm proposing our payroll expenses go. If it's maybe I'll give it, I'm thinking across the board, I want to have everybody get this percentage increase, or I'll say, and this is what typically happens, I'll say, here's where I have for payroll. I'm asking for a certain percentage for the staff. I'm leaving myself out of it. You guys can determine what you want. I don't want to be presumptuous on what you think, where my performance has been. However, this is what I'm asking for my staff. And then give me the ability to give each staff member a raise where I see fit, because they don't know my employees. Maybe there's an employee who outperformed everybody else this last year, and I'd like to give them a little bit more of an increase than other employees. And that's typically how I do it. And then the board will typically ask me to leave the meeting for a certain amount of time while they discuss what they want to do with me. But
Sure.
that's typically how that works.
Yeah, very similar to what we do, like we go cost of living, what's going on. We were fortunate over COVID that, I mean, as well as I do, we couldn't get help, right? And your employees, my employees, me, you, we all had to work like double what we would have had to work because we were way more busy with less help. And we went in and just said, we kind of proposed that, our interments went way up and all of this stuff. And the guys were working every Saturday because we had funerals every Saturday. They were working late, early. We feel that maybe it could be time for a bonus. And we were fortunate where our board took a look at it and said, well, we think that you're definitely entitled to a bonus, and we would like to do a bonus a little higher than even what you thought, would be an appropriate bonus. Because we feel that, yes, you guys were down two, three employees. You couldn't find help because people were at home getting paid. And so we, our board, it's nice because our board understands that portion of it. Definitely try to ask us, like our questions on it. How do you feel about this and where do you think? And I talked a little bit about this I think before, but like when we were looking for help and we were still trying to kind of be around average of what everyone else was at, like in that type of industry for our summer help, and our board said, well, if you're having such a hard time, why don't we bump it up a little bit and then be able to not, be able to say, well, you come work for us and you can get a little extra more than where if you went and worked at, either a cemetery or a grass cutting business or something else, right? Let's try to see if we can't get more people in the door with that. And so, it was great because it was like our idea, but then they even took it to another level, right? And so, again, for very fortunate because, obviously I've talked about this too, but my dad has really done a nice job at, keeping the board very satisfied with how the money is spent, moving forward, trying to keep equipment for as long as possible, not just spend, 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 spend if we don't have to, making ways, running lean and making it work, and taking care of the guys who are putting in the extra time. So, we've been very fortunate because we've got a great board that understands that part of it.
No, I agree too. My board is very great when it comes to that as well. And to be honest, I typically shoot a little bit lower. I probably am always asking for if not a cost of living increase, maybe just a little bit more, but not too much. And typically the board has always come back to me and says, no, we're giving more. Your employees are great. Every single year, you're always taking on more tasks. I'm trying to keep, and that's my big thing too. I want to make sure the board is very aware of the things that we are doing as a staff and that no one's getting into the rut of, nope, this is what we do and I'm not doing anything else. We're always in trying to improve and since we are trying to improve and are improving, I think that needs to be recognized and our board definitely realizes that and they recognize that too. So it's definitely good. And also you gotta, especially when it comes to grass cutters, which is kind of crazy to think, we average probably about 3,000 man hours of grass cutters a year is kind of where we budget. And if you think about a 50-cent increase, that's $1,500 for the year. I mean, that really at the end of the day, that's not much, but 50 cents can be significant if you're trying to recruit employees. Or even if it was a dollar increase, that's $3,000 extra a year. That's really not terrible. I know I'm leaving out payroll taxes and things like that, but just for payroll expenses itself. So it's not terrible, but also, I mean, I have profit and loss. I mean, I have all my profit and loss yearly going back to, the 50s, and it's amazing looking at payroll expenses. I think I compared this year, I went and compared like 1990 to where we are today, and our payroll expenses have gone up like 7 to 10 tenfold in 30 years, which is insane if you actually think about it. But that's the world we live in. And that's where we're at. But speaking of that, I think it's time that we should probably take a break. So let me talk about Sim Cemetery software here. This is something that's revolutionized us and our business at Union Cemetery. It has made us so much more efficient. All our staff, every single employee uses this software to find, locate graves. All our office staff actually uses it for obviously looking up owners, locating graves, looking up any information about the deceased or lot owners, finding where markers are, looking at all the photos of the markers. And our staff is able to use it to find where burials are, to actually locate where cornerstones are, locate where the markers are, and see photos of them. It's just absolutely revolutionized our business. And I don't know, to be honest, I don't know if we could operate our business without Sims right now. It's so ingrained in everybody who works here. So I highly recommend, if anybody wants to learn more information about Sims, please go to simcemeterysoftware.com to learn more, because it's a game changer when it comes to how you operate your cemetery.
For over 125 years, Cold Spring has collaborated with death care professionals to deliver innovative permanent memorial solutions that honor family legacies. Their domestic quarries and fabrication facilities ensure a predictable supply chain while providing quality craftsmanship and personal service. They provide custom memorials, columbariums, mausoleums, cemetery enhancements, helping cemeteries and monument retailers make their mark by creating timeless tributes that stand the test of time. With innovative design tools like personal reflections and dedicated support, they make it easy to bring families' visions to life while streamlining your business. Experience unmatched expertise, innovation, and dedication in memorial design with Cold Spring.
All right, and I'll be here to talk a little bit about our friends over at Paradise Pictures. Once again, Paradise Pictures has been an amazing company to work with. You know, I've said this before, my grandpa would never believe the amount of pictures that we have stacked up ready to go in. And it is fascinating the amount of pictures that get put in on a regular basis. You know, we're ordering pictures left and right. So easy to work with. Simple phone calls. I talked about this before. We've had double orders where, you know, we've had two pictures and then they changed and we forgot to get rid of the other one. They will see it and be like, hey, these are the same person, just one's in a blue shirt, one's in a white shirt. Are you sure you want both, or which one do you want? They pick up on that stuff constantly. So ParadisePictures.com, again, proud member of the MAC, big supporter to the Cemetery Chronicles. If you're looking to get a hold of them, 1-800-960-8040. First job is free just for listening to this great podcast. You can visit them at ParadisePictures.com. Again, Scott and crew over there, they do a fabulous job.
They sure do. Hey, let me ask you this. I've had some interest in this, and I'm curious how often this happens to you about pictures. Obviously, everybody thinks about pictures on monuments and that, you know, it's a picture of the deceased or a picture of the couple of the deceased. How often are you doing photos of, let's say, like their 57 Chev or an object that they have? Are you putting photos on markers like that?
We have, I would say it's more, etchings that we put on that are like that.
Okay.
But a couple things we've done a lot, recently actually is, like signias, like a family, like a last name, like their family signia, or, we've done veterans things for Army, Marines, Air Force, like the symbols.
Okay.
Rather than sandblasting it, we'll put it in a picture. We've done a lot of that stuff. But I would say if it, you know, as far as like, you know, vehicles and stuff like that, that's more done in like when in etching with a hand etcher does stuff like that.
Okay.
But as far as the pictures, yes. I mean, we've put, you know, dogs on there, you know.
Oh,
stuff
yeah.
Like that.
And I suppose you probably put more of a photo of like a favorite car or something like that on a portrait if they're going with a granite that can't be etched, you know, like a red or a gray or something like that. However, what kind of granites? I mean, I know this is getting off topic. What kind of granites can be etched?
Well, most of your dark granites can be etched. You know, obviously, I can't speak on laser because we don't use laser, but a lot of the darker granites can be etched, and as far as you go there, you know, you start with like kind of your jet black is the best, and then any granite that has you know, is going to have that speckle or that shine like a blue pearl, you're going to see that a little bit through the etching.
Yeah.
And so it still can be etched. It just won't be as clean as like a jet black.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have done where we have etched just like a piece of granite and then actually sunk it in to the lighter stone.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then
like a jet black tile or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So almost similar to like what you would do with like a Paradise picture, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sink it in and flush mount it, and we do the same thing with a granite tile. We've done that before.
Interesting. I just wanted to pick your brain on that. I had somebody come up to me today and ask me, they want to have a photo of a car on their memorial, and sandblasted in. However, you can't get the details with sandblasting. Didn't like the idea of etching because they didn't want to do a darker granite. But the possibility is there, putting it on a Paradise Pictures photo,
Yeah.
and they're very intrigued by that. So it might be something we go down. But I just wanted to get
Yeah,
your take on it.
and I mean, if you have like a very colorful vehicle, like a red or blue
Yeah.
or yellow, orange, something that really sticks out, you throw it on a Paradise picture, and we all know how nice those look. So,
Yeah.
you put it on there, and it really can show off what the car looks like. So.
Yeah. Well, so back to our board conversation. Let me ask you, Bobby, what do you guys do for, obviously, I was talking about how we do quarterly meetings. Are you similar?
Yep. Yeah, we do the same. So we have usually February, May, August, and November is kind of what we track. It's usually end of January, February, we have one. Then we have the May meeting, which the May meeting is difficult. I mean, as well as I do, May is so busy in
Yeah.
our business. So a lot, I don't attend any May meetings whatsoever.
Yeah.
I just have my dad goes to those because I just cannot be a part of that.
And your meetings are usually typically during the day.
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Usually over the lunch hour.
Okay.
And so we meet off-site 3 times a year and then on-site once a year. And then like again, August meeting is usually the big one where we kind of go over what we're looking at and what our needs are for the upcoming year, and then we talk about it. And so again, kind of similar to like your budgeting, we like foreshadowing, right? Like, we see that in, December, January, February, whatever it is, we need to start preparing that we need this or we need that. And we just have to look at, what are we doing? Where are we at? Are we able to afford something like this? Is it even worth bringing up, in that aspect? And then usually the November meetings are when they get into, what the plan is for the next year as far as employee, raises, stuff like that. My grandpa, I used to laugh because the November meeting would happen, and my grandpa would always come up to my dad and say, "Well, do you still have a job?" That was his big joke, he would always say. Yeah, so very similar to what you guys do. And then we have, we're fortunate again where, we have a lot of board members who are very successful business, either owners or work for big companies and financials. So we have, like we have a grounds committee, we have equipment committee. So we have these little committees within our board that will talk and email with us throughout the year, like if there's questions or if there's things we need, like if there's an immediate need, like something happens where we have to try to get something, we can just send an email to the committee, they can go over it, and then we can propose it at the next meeting, something like that.
Yeah.
So again, we're fortunate because some of them visit often, like we'll come
Yeah.
through, we'll take a look, and so they just see what the guys are doing on the grounds and see how things are being run, and they can see it with their own eyes, how things are going too. So that helps.
How many members are on your board?
Oh, let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4. I think 16.
Oh wow, that's
Yeah.
good. So how many are in the committees then?
I think we've got like 3 or 4 committees, and it's usually 2 to 3.
Okay.
Right, we have associates and we have trustees on our board, and then obviously we have a president, a vice president, and then we have the secretary treasurer, which is usually like my dad and another person.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So I know we're a small board. We only have 7 on our board. So it's a lot smaller. However, I mean, it does get difficult if we don't have members that come to a meeting, because obviously you have to have so many to have a quorum for anything. However, the seven are very committed, so it's not often that we're having significant issues with that. However, we've had it in the past where we've had health issues that have arisen, and that has put us in predicaments because the board's small. But that's something to think about. But also just having the seven folks to try to manage for meetings is not a it makes life a little bit easier as well.
Like I said, we're fortunate because on average, we're usually at around 12 at meetings, you know, like that's average. So, you know, anywhere 3 to 4. Again, we have a lot of our board members are still running businesses or working in financial companies and stuff. And so that's the nice part too, is when you have these guys and women, men and women who are involved with financial stuff. So they can, you know, they can run with, they get a budget or they get our financials and they can all look that over and run with it and say, hey, you know, why are we investing in this? Or we should have a meeting with the bank or a meeting with our retirement company that we're using for the retirement stuff or our stock stuff, like, you know, our investments. We can let's get a meeting in and let's bring some points up. So again, we're fortunate when it comes to that. And a lot of our board members are, man, I want to say second, maybe third generation board members. And we have some who like we have a newer member on our board whose dad ran the cemetery before my dad.
Oh, no way. How crazy.
And so
So he has that experience because you guys had a house on site. Did he live there?
That guy did not at that time.
But you know, he's intimately involved. He knew exactly how it was, you know, to run a cemetery.
But the I don't yeah he never lived, I don't think, because that the house was there till, oh, I want to say like 62, 63, and then they started to develop that area over there. They had a barn, and then that's when they ripped the barn out and stuff. But the house was just kind of, I think, too far gone at that point, and it wasn't worth it, and no one had lived in there for a few years. And so they tore the house down, tore the barn down, then they put up our wall crypts and niches, and now we have a whole section that's in that area as well. But that's the fun part though. Like we have the board meeting in August on site, and any of the board members that hadn't been there in 6 months to a year show up, and they're going, man, this new section we laid out is booming. You know, there's monuments everywhere, and they get to see the changes. So that's the fun.
And that's, you know, to be honest, that's kind of the fun part about the era we live in when it comes to cemeteries right now. You would have, if you would have gone back 100 years, you're not building columbariums, you're not building crypts because this is not a thing. Everybody just does in-ground burials. This is what the cemetery layout looks like, and this is what it's going to look like. Now we're trying to think outside the box. We're coming out with new concepts, and we're watching these ideas flourish and come to fruition. And that's the fun part about our job, I feel right now, is watching these things get built and actually try to sell them and work with families for new options and things like that. So that's exciting, at least on my end. I don't know, maybe it's a little nerve-wracking for other folks, but I enjoy that part of it.
I mean, I think it's both, right? You know, it's nerve-wracking when you have to spend money because, you know, again, like you talk about it, you know, like if, you know, at a golf course, people are paying every time they go, right? You know, we get paid, and that's supposed to cover, you know, perpetual care forever, on that space, and cover, you know, maintenance to your equipment and everything, and it just flowing back in, right? So, you know, it's nerve-wracking in the part of, you know, we're spending this money to put this building up, and I hope we get this money back out of it. Because, you know, again, I think I've talked about this before. Like we put those wall crypts up thinking that that was the new age and the new thing, and they had taken loans out at that time. And realistically, we'll never get the money back out that was spent on those wall crypts. And it was, I think I told you we had like drawings, and we had a little miniature sculpture of what it was going to look like, and it looks nothing like that. But at that point in time, that was the thing that was coming out, above ground burial, community above ground burial, and they thought that this was going to be the new wave, right? Because it was kind of before cremation was a big thing. So they had put some niches on the very end, each end of one side, and thought, well, we'll just throw a few of these in there in case that becomes a thing. But they really thought that that was going to take off, and it didn't. You know, I mean, it didn't the way that they thought it was going to. And we ended up taking, you know, a whole wall crypt section, and we had a guy that did some glass work, and he made dividers for us, and we turned them into niches. You know, a whole bay we turned into niches, and so, you know, we tried to same thing, right? Like, think outside the box. Like, how can we get some revenue out of this building that we're, you know, paying so much money for, and we're not getting anything out of it, and cremation is starting to become popular, and niches are becoming popular, but we don't really have the money to put up a new niche building. So
And these are this is a good conversation because this obviously this you your board has to be intimately involved in these conversations. And you're right. You mentioned it before how you kind of bring up topics a little bit over and over again until you fully, propose it. Just so that's it's not kind of out of the blue. And I wholeheartedly agree when it comes to talking to talking about ideas and especially spending money for the future expansion of the cemetery or whatnot. I bring up the topics first. Typically, how I propose it to the board is let's have a discussion about this, and I'll kind of come up with an analysis, and I'll write it out and hand it to everybody or and give it to them prior to a board meeting to kind of review, and then we discuss it at the meeting. Like, here's a thought that I would like to explore because here's a need we need or whatnot. And then if I have any analytics behind it, I present it in that document I give them. But I'd like to explore this idea and potentially move, and if it seems like we need to move forward, we can move forward in this direction or just at least explore the idea. That's one board meeting. And then the next, we maybe talk about some more about it until maybe it may be a year or two, especially depending on how big the project is, that's when obviously we vote on something and actually move forward with something. So I think that's where it's difficult for people to understand when they're coming into a cemetery and they say, well, I want this option. Why can't you just make this option happen? You have to realize it's going to be probably a couple year process before we can get something moving forward. And it's not because we're dinosaurs and we don't want to accommodate folks. It's because we're always, and we've talked about this at length in many of our podcasts, we're looking into the future. We have to be dead set and know that whatever decision we make, because we're going to have to live with it forever, is going to be the right decision because we cannot be willy-nilly at making these decisions. And to be honest, I don't think my board would really respond well either if I came to a board meeting and proposed, all right, this is something I've been thinking about. I think we need to do this. They're like, whoa, where this came out of left field. You weren't even what where'd this come from? That wouldn't go over well.
I've got three bids and they're ready to start next week.
Exactly. So that's just so insight on maybe how to handle boards. And not necessarily that we're trying to manipulate a board into something. It's just the right way to do things, I think. It's going to be a slower process. You have to always calculate that the process is going to be slow.
Well, like we talked about, you know, I mean, I think we're fortunate to have boards to begin with and people that can kind of help us with these, right? Like, you know, if it was just one person making decisions, you know, nonstop for a nonprofit, you could put yourself in a hole real fast.
Oh yeah, very much so.
So
Yeah, no, that's true. But there's always positives and your pluses and minuses for having to work with a board. I mean, I'm sure there's times where you're sitting there going, I wish I didn't have to go through a board on this decision. But also, it makes sense why a nonprofit is run by a board, because it just there's just safety nets to ensure that the cemetery is not going to in a fiscally irresponsible way. They're being responsible, and they're trying to make the most prudent decisions they possibly can moving
Well, I
forward.
mean, we're talking about future, right? You
Yeah.
know, if you have one person at the helm that's making every decision on how money is spent and just spending it freewheeling, you're not looking much into the future there. You know,
Yeah, I mean,
that's all about today.
you're exactly right. And if you're a cemetery that is privately owned, that's a little different too, because maybe you don't have a board, but the person who's making the decision, that's coming out of their pocketbook. So they're going to be very, very analytical as well on how things are done. So it's but most I feel like most cemeteries, even if they're not nonprofit, if they're for profit or a municipality or something, or a church cemetery, there's some kind of structure of folks who overlook the cemetery so that there isn't just one person in charge. So everybody's dealing with this. Everybody, who manages the cemetery has to answer to some collective of individuals typically. And it's always a fun process, but it's a necessary process. So
Well, and then if they don't, they just email Dominic Pierre and ask him all the questions on how do I spend all this money?
That's, let me tell you, that's a question I'm getting all the time. How do I spend all this money? No, I don't, to be honest, I don't think I've ever gotten that question. I've definitely got, it's always the opposite. I
How do we
have
make more money?
Yeah,
I
I
have no.
have no money, but this needs to be done. How do we do it? Well, that's a little difficult. If I could be have a dollar for every time somebody asked me how to make money appear out of thin air. Well, I mean, if I knew how to make money appear out of thin air, I guess I wouldn't need that dollar. I'd already be a millionaire. So,
You probably wouldn't still be working, right?
yeah, I definitely wouldn't be. Well, I wouldn't be doing this, I'll tell you
Well, I
that.
can tell you this. Now that I am done with my tryout stuff, I'm excited to dive into our cemetery handbook here.
Oh, fun.
And
Yeah.
I can't wait to start peeking at that a little bit now that I have a little more free time.
Well, I'm excited
So,
to hear your review on it. And also, there was one good response. I mean, there's multiple good responses, but there was one response that came back from our surveys for the convention just on new topics, and I thought this was an interesting one. Speaking of kind of boards and just and your perpetual care fund, is having a topic on what can you do with your perpetual care fund, and what should you do with your perpetual care fund, and that I think that's an interesting topic, and maybe we'd want to have a guest on our podcast that can talk about that. That might be something in the future. I think that's an interesting topic myself, because in Minnesota there are you are you do ha you are hand you're you do have handcuffs on when it comes to your perpetual care and what you can do with that money and what you can't. So it'd be good to get a refresher on what you can and can't.
Yeah,
And
for sure.
also what you should and shouldn't do with it, because you can probably be irresponsible in a legal way with your perpetual care fund, and it's probably good not to do that. So,
Well,
and
I think we saw a few surprised faces when we talked a little bit about it at the convention. We didn't dive fully into it, but you know, some of the people were like, "Wait, what?
yeah, I
What
know.
do you mean? And I'm supposed to be spending some of that money?"
You always see that, I think, and that always makes you a little nervous, but that's not a bad thing. It's like when you listen to the lawyers speak and you get scared, and you always tell the lawyers like, "Yeah, I liked your talk, but you scared me." And they always say, "That's good. That's what I wanted. You should be scared." So that's always good. But anyways, I think we're up on time, Bobby. I hope you have another good week here. We're probably we got a couple weeks before our next child is due, so
Yeah,
hopefully I'll
baby
be here next.
watch.
Yeah, we're on baby watch now, so
Baby
that's
watch 2025.
2025. It's exciting and nerve-wracking all at the same time, but I have
Little
my
Bobby, I can't wait till he gets here.
Bobby. Yeah, the podcast, you will all be the first to know the name when it happens. So, and if anybody, I'm sure there's somebody out there. Why don't you email us if you have a pool out there on guessing the name, and so that'll be a fun little bet on the side, huh? All right. Anything else you have, Bobby?
Nope. Just another glorious, beautiful week. It looks like here in Minnesota, beautiful fall week for us. So,
Yeah, we're right in the heart of fall. It's kind of fun. It's a good time to be up in Minnesota, I gotta tell you. You can wear kind of a sweatshirt out working. Tell me, Bobby, is that what you're wearing when you're working? I have a climate controlled office.
No, I did have a long sleeve on today, but that shed pretty fast at one of the funerals. But yeah, no, start the day with a sweatshirt, long sleeve, and usually finish a day back in a polo or a t-shirt, right? So,
Yeah, that's good. That's the good life. We only have a couple more weeks of that, and then we're always in a jacket. So it's coming. It's coming. All right, Bobby, you have a good week. We'll see everybody next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast so you are notified when new shows are posted. If you would like to get a hold of us, please email us at info@thecemeterychronicles.com.
When it comes to honoring a life well lived, every detail matters. That's why Paradise Pictures has been crafting premium, high-fired porcelain on steel portraits since 1991. Built to last a lifetime, guaranteed against any damage. Whether it's monuments, markers, crypts, or glass front niches, Paradise Pictures offers a full suite of personalized memorialization solutions, including elegant bronze frames. As a proud member of the Minnesota Association of Cemeteries, they believe samples sell products, so they're offering you a free first job just for listening. Visit ParadisePictures.com or call 1-800-960-8040 to request yours today. Paradise Pictures, preserving memories beautifully.
Managing a cemetery comes with a lot of responsibilities, but with Sims, it doesn't have to be overwhelming. Sims Cemetery software helps you keep track of burial records, maps, and maintenance tasks all in one secure, easy-to-use system. With intuitive mapping, secure record keeping, and cloud-based access, Sims makes organization simple. Ready to see how Sims can make you streamline your cemetery operations? Visit simscemeterysoftware.com to learn more. Also, if you mention that you heard about us on the Cemetery Chronicles podcast, Sims will give you a 10% discount on a new software license.